Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1285.PR2413, certificate number 44411, Telling the Beads.
John Roderick, are you superstitious? I don't think I know this about you.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to think if there's some, because, you know, I have some strange Victorian habits and, you know, some weird folk wisdoms.
I could totally see you like standing out back on your veranda of an evening, saying to yourself little rhyming couplets about what the shape of the clouds might mean for tomorrow's weather or other omens.
I don't believe in omens, but if I...
Are you too scientific? Because many of your eccentricities could be superstitions. Like if you told somebody that you kept your door open with an ingot of silver, what is it?
Yeah.
If you told somebody you used an ingot of silver for a doorstop and you told them it was to keep out werewolves or dropsy or whatever.
Sure, it makes sense now.
It sounds like a superstition.
Now that you put it that way. I do knock on wood. I don't know where I got that habit.
But you'll do it as kind of a social thing, like, you know, oh, I hope that happens. Knock, knock,
yeah, it's just, it's sort of like just saying like, inshallah, you know, like in the Arab world, you never say something where you try and predict the future without saying God willing, because it seems like, I mean, that seems dangerous.
Because
God laughs at your plans.
What's the expression? Tilting at windmills. That's not right.
You're tempting fate.
You're laughing at tempting fate. Yeah. There we go. Something like that.
So they say inshallah all day. You know, it's something that anytime it's like, well, I'll see you at four, inshallah, God willing.
Do you know because of the Moorish conquest of Spain, in modern Spanish, the way you say hopefully is essentially you say inshallah. You say ojalá que, and that means hopefully. And what you're really saying is I hope Allah grants.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, these are like Francoist Catholics saying this, but what they're really saying is, I'm a secret Muslim.
Yeah, that's right. Secret Muslims. But so I knock on wood that way if I'm like, oh, you know, nothing bad could happen.
What if I were to sneeze right now? Hold on. I'm just going to.
Okay. Phew. Bless you. Or I mean, I guess I would say Gesundheit sometimes.
Do you, as part of your whole Central European, I camped by the Danube kind of thing.
But you know, that's more, I think of that more as like social politeness. Like if I sneeze, even if no one is in earshot, I always say, excuse me, just because I...
Are you mad that no one said bless you?
No one ever does. I mean, the rare time somebody says Gesundheit or bless you, typically like black ladies will always say bless you if I sneeze. It seems like
typically.
Does anyone
still say God bless you or are we too secular in age?
I don't think anybody says God bless you. I think it's implied.
It's like Xmas?
In the bless.
Someone, the universe bless you.
Local authorities bless you.
Or you could do the whole God and I hope she blesses you.
Yeah.
Did I just blow your mind?
She bless you. That's how the the Spanish will say it in 1,000 years. She bless you.
Are they all Wiccans now?
Well, we'll all be Wiccans.
Sure, we'll all be Wiccans. That's an album title.
Are you suspicious? Or superstitious? I know you're suspicious.
Suspicious of what? Of black ladies? No.
No.
What an awful thing to say.
Of me. Every time you come in the house, you look around, you're like, what's going on? What new rat trap is going to spring on me now?
What new ingot? I did have to navigate an obstacle course made of old jeans to get to my podcasting chair.
Let me ask you this. Do your jeans wear out or do they blow out?
You need to explain the difference, I think.
Well, like wear out, I guess they would just become too wrinkled or tattered. Oh, I see.
Blow out is a single place where there's a
blow
hole.
Out, like, like the knees blow out or some other part of the jean always rips or tears before.
It used to be knees. Yeah, I've never had a pair of jeans wear out. It used to be knees. And lately, I think it's inseam, which probably means I'm getting fatter.
Inseam?
Yeah, but like my thighs are going when I walk. And so that goes first.
Well, you will notice the reason you stepped over that giant pile of jeans is that every one of them, and there are a dozen there, every one of them has a blowout in the same location.
The butt.
In the butt. They always blow out.
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about, right there where a pair of jeans might go.
Yeah, I guess that's where it is, but it's like in the seat of the pants. And so the jeans are all, as far as I'm concerned, perfectly good jeans. It's just they all have a big, they're worn out in the seat.
I like how you're looking for the bright side of your jeans. Well, they're all great.
They're great.
But they just need to work on one little thing.
I can't.
This giant hole in the butt.
I can't bring myself to throw them away because if you looked at them, you'd be like, these jeans are ready to go. But also the seat of the pant is the most impossible place to put a patch.
Right.
It's so hard to get a sewing machine in there. So anyway.
Well, you don't want to do it while you're wearing them. Is that the problem you've been having?
Well, actually, depending on the seamstress.
So is that a superstition that you won't throw away your jeans?
No, that's just a dumb thing. I have jeans I've been schlepping around for 15 years because I didn't want to get rid of them because they seemed like they were still good. That's the problem.
If you get them all to blow out in different places, it would be like organ donation.
Right.
You could make one new hybrid pair of jeans. It's a Levi Guess, Stella McCartney, whatever you want.
I've talked to people about this who are like, oh, they're totally repairable, but for $70.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's the other problem. What I want is to live in a hippie environment where hippies just sit around repairing jeans all day.
And say, she bless you.
She bless you. She bless you. But do you have superstitions?
I was trying to think because I got asked this a lot after I was on Jeopardy. Because people love the idea of baseball play, like Wade Boggs
right. Only
eating chicken if he's in a hitting streak.
Did you pull up your sleeve before you went to the plate? Step back from the plate and pull up your sleeve?
Really, all I can think of is that I insisted on staying in the same kind of flea bag motel near the studio, even when I could afford something a little nicer. I mean, I could always afford something a little nicer, but I loved that it was right by the studio and it had a marquee that said color TV and phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, phones. This place has, I mean, you've probably stayed in a place that has color TV or phones, right?
Sure, but both.
This place had both.
I was going to say that you insisted on every time dressing like a mid-90s Mormon computer programmer. Wasn't that your like?
That was more of a comedy bit, like a kind of a performance art piece I was doing.
Did you really? Did you?
Yeah.
You were like, I'm going to self-consciously like wear browns?
No.
I'm going to be self-aware here? I'm going to like dress like a nebbish?
No, I just had penny suits. Also, they weren't browns. I had like a gray suit that looks brown in a lot of the pictures. And so somebody just sent me a picture of a guy who had dressed as me for Halloween.
Uh-huh.
And he wore a brown jacket. And it pissed me off. That jacket's not brown. It's charcoal. I can't affect the lighting of the Jeopardy set.
Was it really from Penny's?
No, but you know, that kind of you know, Men's Warehouse.
Sure.
Because I was a computer programmer. I didn't, you know, you can wear gross cargo shorts to work
even
every day.
Even then you could, let alone now. Now you'd just wear your Punisher t-shirt.
Yeah, now I don't even put on the cargo shorts. Like everything's optional when you work at home.
But you had that thing where you would kind of throw your beeper down like as a mic drop that people like to point out,
but that only happened a couple of times. See, you don't know my oeuvre. That's like one YouTube clip.
Sorry. I don't know your oeuvre. Okay. So, but no, do you knock on wood?
I don't knock on wood.
Would you walk under a ladder?
That just seems like it's not super safe for the guy on the ladder.
Yeah. But let's say you're walking along and there's a ladder. There's nobody up the ladder.
I'm aware of superstitions. Like, I'll point it out when a black cat crosses my path or if I'm on floor 13 as a curiosity, but it does not trouble me.
Yeah.
I do have little private games. Do you think this is the same as superstition? Like, I was realizing that I have all these little games I play with myself, like, not sexual. Like, when I go to a movie, if they say the name of the movie, I will clap quietly.
In the movie.
If somebody in the movie says, and it doesn't happen much in Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
That famous scene where they're like, you're just one of those reservoir dogs. And you're like, yay.
I love it when it's the last line of the movie. I guess we were all just a bunch of reservoir dogs. Yay.
So you quietly clap. Oh, okay.
But if you go to Hamlet or something, you're going to be.
Yeah,
gonna
right.
Be, you're going
to
be.
Oh, you don't have to do it every time if they say that.
No, you do. You do it every time.
Whoa,
you do. And it's not that if you don't do it, something bad will happen. But that's just the rules of the game. Or if I'm in a car and or I'm looking out the window of a train or a car and something's going by, like a row of trees or poles or even stripes on the highway, I will find myself kind of tapping my thumb in the rhythm of when each tree crosses the pillar of the car or train window. Uh-huh.
Those things feel, because I do a lot of those things, but those feel like sort of like not
obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, not OCD, but like borderline OCD. Like right. if I'm just walking along, I don't have to perform any rituals. But if I start to walk on every brick,
yeah,
I have to then complete the task.
Well, you don't want
to
break your mother's back. She's very nice and vigorous.
But like if I'm walking along and I touch every phone pole,
yeah,
if I do 3 of them, I have to do 30 of them because I'm not going to leave that job undone.
But that's maybe how superstitions start, you know, back in a pre-scientific era, you know, people would realize, you know, the Jeopardy stuff I just did because I thought having a good routine would be smart. It's like Ichiro doing that weird stretching thing before he swings.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
Right. But like, let's say you're living 20,000 years ago and the one day that you have a little thing where you rub your thumb on your axe handle and the one day you don't do it, grandpa gets eaten by a Smilodon.
Right.
You'd remember that.
Yes.
Probably. Grandpa wouldn't. And maybe that's how superstitions start?
You know, one of the things, do you remember a few years ago on the internet where everything was an ad hominem attack? Do you remember that? Like somehow the term ad hominem got...
It got so widespread, people would just say ad hom in the reply.
Right.
And you'd be like, oh, I just got owned by ad hom guy.
And now I feel like correlation does not equal causation is the ad hom of 2018.
I feel like I see straw man more. Straw man.
Straw man's in there a lot.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was teaching 3 logical fallacies to 100 million nerds.
I think the greatest trick was creating the phrase begs the question. That was the greatest trick the devil ever pulled.
Since it clearly means raises the question, but actually doesn't.
I think also the word irony being like, I don't know, the word irony has never made sense to English speakers as far as I can tell, because it gets used 100 ways, almost never referring to actual irony.
There's a lengthy chapter of my book. I commend it to you, John. Oh. I commend Planet Funny chapter 6 to your reading.
The word irony.
It traces the history of the word irony.
I will go read it this afternoon.
Let's take a break right now.
I'll read my autographed copy. That's just right in the other room. Oh, wait a minute. I don't have an autographed copy. You sent me your galley. You sent me your dumb galley a couple of times, but where's my autographed first edition?
They should have sent you a finished copy.
Yeah, they sent me, but it's not like endorsed to me. It doesn't say, John, I couldn't have done this without you. Thank you for all your help and support in my life.
Well, that's when you have to come to the author humbly and say, hey, Ken, thank you for sending me this directly from your publisher. It still smells like fresh ink and cardstock, but would you do me the privilege of a brief tribute on this blank page at the beginning?
See, I don't understand the superstitions of the publishing world.
Yeah, what's the difference between superstition and etiquette? A lot of things that we say are etiquette are really just...
Sure.
Some etiquette has clear utilitarian value. You know, giving up your seat on a crowded subway to an elderly person or a pregnant woman is not like, boy, who's the first weirdo that did that?
Well, and wouldn't it be great if that action was actually connected to a feeling of bad luck if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't get up, you know.
The soul of the fetus will whisk into your body and make you say awkward things to the opposite sex unless you give up your seat.
We should start connecting etiquette things to superstition just because there's so little etiquette in the world.
Anymore. Why do you use the left fork for salad? Well, actually, that's because in some cultures, if your right hand touched salad, your lettuce crops would all die for a generation.
That's right. If you wear cargo pants to a wedding, you will make the fields fallow for a decade.
What if that one actually did have some real story? Like, no, cargo pants is what you want to a wedding. Think of all the things you could hold in all those pockets.
Sure. All the cake you could take home to your spouse that has agoraphobia and didn't join you.
I'm thinking of some case where the couple needed some Leatherman or something and nobody had one. And the one guy in cargo pants is like,
well, the thing is, if you need a Leatherman, you're going to be wearing a utility belt. You don't put your Leatherman in your cargo shorts.
To a wedding.
No.
And it should be Batman's utility belt. So you have like a little sleepy gas, all kinds of gas canisters, basically, is what you want.
Well, your bat rope.
Does Batman have a bat compass?
Well,
I'm not familiar with him ever being like, let's see, the Riddler says he's at the old abandoned amusement park in North Gotham, but which way is north?
I bet it's embedded in his helmet. It's a heads-up display.
He's like you. He doesn't get lost. Batman always knows which way is north because he's Batman. He got taught in a monastery somewhere.
Right. I do not get lost.
There's one particular superstition that I have always been very interested in. In 1858, there's a poet, American poet named John Greenleaf Whittier, who, Quaker guy, as a result, prominent abolitionist of his era, not read much today, but he's the kind of poet that if you were an American school child in 1890 or 1930 or 1950, you would be sick of.
Right.
Because he was just assigned. And you would have to know about, he was the guy that wrote about the barefoot boy with cheek of tan. I don't know. Do you know about the barefoot boy with cheek of tan?
Is he talking about his butt cheek?
Yeah. He's got tan butt cheeks. He's European and he goes to nude beaches. He does not have a tan line.
I don't, but you know, he is precisely what people in the 90s referred to as the white male canon that needed to be supplanted by a more diverse.
And he's a pretty good argument for it, right? Because it's like people teaching the same crap for just because someone else taught it. Like, I guess these kids have to read Silas Marner and The Boy Stood on the Burning Deck.
Right. We only have 40 books, so so here you go, Billy Budd again.
So it's very easy to be cynical when my daughter brings home the 6 books they're reading and they're all, you know, different kinds of immigrant experience, which is what my kids are reading this year. But really, when you're seeing, oh, it replaced the Quaker poet John Greenleaf Whittier, you're okay with it. He also wrote...
Just to interject, I did not mean a minute ago to imply that Melville did not belong in the canon, just that Billy Budd is not his best work.
I see.
Right. I'm not anti-Melville. I'm just not pro-Billy Budd.
You got fan mail for mentioning Bartleby the Scrivener on this program. So you want to tread lightly with the Melvillians, the Melvillage people, whatever they're called.
The thing is, I'm one of them. I just, you know, there are some books that are better than others.
You either live as a Mel hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the Melvillian.
Oh, that's terrible. The Melvillian.
Yeah, it would be spelled differently.
Yeah.
Although the world is full of people who spell it Villian, and they all have... It's like the internet. Like, that's when I first learned that none of my friends could spell definitely. Half the people I knew spelled definitely with an A instead of the second I. Or, here's the thing...
definitely.
Yeah, and the thing that's bugging me online this week is that no one knows that the word for agree is jibe with a B.
Who doesn't know that?
Everyone on the internet says jive.
Oh, jive.
This jives with my thinking. Like, I guess they saw airplane? I don't know.
No, that's just one of those, there's not enough room in people's minds for two words.
For two words that sound like.
And so it's just like.
Let's tell the future. If you guys still use English and you're saying jive to mean.
You jibe with something.
Yes, with it. Yeah. If you're using jive to mean agree, please, I implore you. Whittier also wrote Barbara Fritchie. Do you know the legend of Barbara Fritchie?
I know the name Barbara Fritchie.
She work with your mom? She's a friend of your mom's?
No, I feel like Barbara Fritchie might have been one of those like very literary drag queen names. Right?
Barbara
like,
Bitchy.
It could have been. There was a time, and I swear most futurelings probably will not know about this world, but there was a time when the drag world was very smart. Like the drag queen world had incredible
99% of puns told in America were in drag queen names.
Incredible humor, and that would have absolutely been the type of reference that you would encounter there. But no, Barbara.
It's never actually happened, but it's a Civil War legend of an old grandma in Pennsylvania, maybe, and the occupying Confederate general sees that she's still flying the American flag, and he's pissed, and he rides up to her house with a full battalion or whatever. And Barbara Fritchie says, at least in the poem, "Shoot if you will this old gray head, but save my country's flag," she said.
Oh.
And it's one of these situations where the general is actually impressed by her spitfire gumption. The kind of thing that never happens in real life, right?
Right. In fact, they threw her down a well.
If you're honest and tell your boss, he'll be so pleased, he'll promote you immediately. And no, that never actually happened. Yeah, Barbara Fritchie was thrown down a well. No,
don't be honest. Don't tell your boss.
The lost third verse is the general being like, "All right, boys."
Barbara Fritchie was hanged from an apple tree and her body was burned.
But one of Whittier's most anthologized poems is called Telling the Bees. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a Scottish ballad kind of a thing. It's a young lad telling of his, it's basically the summer lovin' song in Greece, except he's not bragging to his friends. He's just talking about what a beautiful summer he had with this one fair maid from over the ridge or whatever.
Sounds like he was bragging to his friends.
Yeah. Maybe all those poems are really just, "Tell me more, tell me more.
Did she put up a fight?"
No, because...
Wow.
I know, why would you start with that line?
That's terrible. I'm saying that
that's the
all
worst.
Of these poems going all the way back, they're just awful.
But in the poem, the narrator actually returns to see his this country girl, Mary, that he loved and spent a blissful... They've spent a month apart, which to him is a year, he says, because that's how lovers reckon time.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets back to her little thatched cottage or whatever, and the first thing he sees is somebody laying pieces of black crepe on the beehives out back.
Oh no.
And
this is a bad omen.
It's not a great omen.
Did he knock on wood? Black crepe. If you see black crepe, it's not a birthday party.
Did everybody just have black crepe back then in case of a death? I guess.
Think
what else
so.
What else would you use
well,
it for?
Well, it was before colored crepe was invented.
And Halloween had not yet been invented. So nobody needed spooky tablecloths. So
I don't know. I think of that era as being full of spooky tablecloths.
Really?
Yeah, that was just one of the... They only had a couple of kinds.
If everyone's a goth, no one is, I think.
I guess
Miss Havisham. Miss Havisham's the only goth of the era. And he's like, oh, maybe her grandpa died. Like, hopefully, he thinks, maybe her relative died.
Right.
But then he sees a servant girl out. He sees grandpa sitting on the porch. And the servant girl is out singing to the beehive. And he doesn't think this is odd. And the poem ends, "And the song she was singing ever since in my ear sounds on. Stay at home, pretty bees, fly not hence. Mistress Mary is dead and gone." So his love is, as usually happens in these ballads, his young love has, like Annabelle Lee, not survived to consummate.
Not survived to haunt you on Instagram, where you have to wonder whether or not to unfollow or to continue to follow and be tormented by her.
Is that what happens
by
to,
her happier
to, your,
posts?
To your late girlfriend?
No,
oh,
this
these are exes.
Yeah, this doesn't happen.
They're not dead and on Instagram.
Right. I mean, in the old days, right, if there was a chance that the girl that you had a summer fling with would then die of cholera, and you'd...
That'd be perfect.
You'd get to mourn her, but not have to like ever think of her having fun somewhere else for the rest
of
her
you'd
life.
You'd be at brunch, you'd be like, oh, I'm still friends with all my exes because they're dead.
Because they all died.
They all died immediately. And you're not Bluebeard or anything. They really did just
No, they
all
just
died
of poisoned well water. Or
well, back then, they wouldn't haunt you on Instagram. They would all literally haunt you.
Right.
You would see Annabelle Lee floating outside your garret window.
Well, if everyone's a goth, then no one is.
The funny thing is he never explains in the poem. It's all just taken for granted that you would just see somebody.
The servant girl would be singing to the bees.
Of course you'd be telling, singing to us. She's singing to a beehive because Mistress Mary died. Like to him, the shocking part is that his girlfriend is dead, not that a servant girl is talking to her bees. To me, he's burying the lead. And that's because this is a venerable tradition that country people in Whittier's day would have known. And not just in 19th century colonial or 19th century America, but also back in Britain, in Ireland, Scandinavia, Central Europe, Germany, all your all your parts, Moldova, mm-hmm. Moravia, Moldavia, Latveria, uh-huh. Wakanda, like they all, Zamunda?
Yeah, Zamunda,
The country from coming to America.
Bulgogia.
They would all have this tradition, which is that when something, some big news happened in the household, specifically a death, one of the first things you had to do was to let the bees in the beehive know.
Yes.
If not, not just a breach of etiquette, but like a terrible omen.
Sure. No, you would... You would suffer real consequences.
Yeah, the bees would probably die.
Or split.
Yeah, so there's essentially two different variants of this belief. And I think one of the common ones is that if a member of the family marries and you don't tell, the bees bail. And that's bad for the family. You need the honey.
Right.
And you need the pollination for your garden.
They're offended. The bees are offended at that point.
They're like the... Like the whole plot of Sleeping Beauty is based on somebody not getting invited to a baby shower and getting pissed and not having Facebook. So she curses people. It's the same thing. And then if it's a funeral, if a member of the family dies, then if you don't tell the bees, they will die. And I assume bring consequences on the family as well. Like bad things could happen to you. And maybe the bad things are all bee related. Like you just don't get honey and you don't get, your garden doesn't look as good next year.
I mean, if you think about bee related bad things, that's a pretty long list.
Like them swarming and killing you with...
Well, I mean, we're living in a world where we fear the loss of our bees, and it has dire consequences.
It's funny that now this is some kind of modern end times thing, but even back then, on their small little individual economy scale, like one of the worst things they could think of would be to lose their bees.
Well, this has roots in the ancient world.
Yeah, like the bees have been associated with the gods back to, like I know in Greek myths, Zeus and Dionysus were both fed by bees as babies. Bees would bring them milk and honey. And so that begins, or at least continues the tradition of bees being some kind of divine messengers. In medieval England, they were called the birds of God, which is proof that medieval people were very religious and very mm-hmm. bad at zoology.
They did not know how to tell birds from bees.
They did not know about the birds and the bees.
And that's one of the first things they teach us. Right. But like priestesses in the ancient world were called bees. Like the name Melissa means bee.
It's Greek for bee.
Yeah.
And I always just assumed, because bees are so important economically. And that's true. Europe did not have sugar until essentially the Crusades brought knowledge of, I mean, the Greeks and Romans had enough trade with, say, Egypt to know, hey, there are these plants that have compacted honey in them. But in general, knowledge of sugar was lost in Europe until very late. And even well into the time when people knew that the Middle Eastern and India, people in India and Arabia had sugar, honey was still the most common sweetener because that was all they had.
Because all they had were natural food co-ops.
Right.
They didn't eat refined sugar.
They had homeopathic sugar, which is called honey.
It was bad for you. That's why you need vaccines.
But the bees are also connected with people in strong ways. There's this idea that, today we maybe have this idea with dogs and cats. But back then, the idea was that bees were closely connected with the souls of people. And I'm not sure why. Plato wrote, for example, that he believed in the transmigration of souls and different kinds of people could be reincarnated as different kinds of animals. And this probably comes from seeing human traits in animals, seeing like a donkey being stubborn and being like, oh, that was a stubborn old guy who came back as a donkey. But his view was that people who were kind of sober-minded, quiet, just normal good folks, philosophical in a normal way but not schooled, would come back as bees or ants, which have a society, a complicated society.
But sure. I was just teaching my daughter the parable of the ant and the grasshopper the other day.
About how the ants are good and the grasshopper's lazy?
I mean, I think that's the message of the parable of the ant and grasshopper.
Were you teaching it backwards? Because you're a musician.
As I was telling her the story, I was like, look, there's the grasshopper.
There's this cool-ass grasshopper.
The grasshopper's got a lot of things on his mind. He's chilling a lot,
And these ants are just a huge bummer for him.
I'm not anti-grasshopper. I'm not necessarily pro-ant. I always take a middle view.
I like that you teach the controversy in all of Aesop's fables. There's this cool hare who likes to show off because he's awesome.
And this kind of boring turtle that's just plodding away at his daily routine. I remember it was an event that really stuck out in my young life. I was in Morocco and was kind of had formed an association with this kind of group of young guys. And we were sort of tear-assing around
You were not tearing ass. You were tear ass.
We were tear assing.
Your jeans are tearing ass.
My jeans, my I tear the ass of my jeans and but I tear ass.
The legs inside the jeans are tear assing.
In,
got it.
In a town. But we were in Fez and they were Fezians.
Is that right?
But I'd become a kind of.
They're
like,
not pheasants?
No.
A pheasant of Moroccans.
They were, you know, they weren't a member of the pheasant class.
Fezziwinks.
They were a member of the mercantile class.
Gotcha.
Did you say Fezziwinks? anyway, so one night we were all kind of crouched in an alley telling stories. And one of the guys started to imitate his friends by portraying them as animals. And his point was that in every group of six people, one of them's a rooster, one of them is a pig, one of them is a donkey.
I'm taking notes.
One of them is a dog. One of them is a cat. And he went around this group and you were just like, oh my God, he is the rooster in this group. And the kid, you know, that he was pointing to and like imitating, like, the kid was like smiling and acknowledging.
No, it's true. He got
like,
me.
I'm the rooster. It's true. And that, you know, and the pig was like, yeah, I'm the pig. And the scales fell from my eyes. And from that point on, anytime I'm in a gathering, a group of friends, I cannot help but look at them and say like, oh, look, you know, there he is. He's the fox of the group and he's the, you know, the domestic dog or whatever. It's a truism. And I think it's something rooted in the ancient world. And I think it's something...
You don't think this is just a case of like people liking to impose a classification system, the same reason astrology, for example, becomes a popular superstition.
Oh, maybe, but it's...
Because, you know, confirmation bias. There's an internet thing. Confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias. But we are already imposing qualities on the animals, yeah. Right? Like industriousness on an ant or pride on a rooster. That aren't necessarily, I mean, the rooster is not crowing out of pride, presumably.
The ant's pretty good, though. Don't put down the ant.
The ant is very
like,
industrious.
He's got to lift things that are 200 times his body weight. And
yeah, it's true.
But you're right about the rooster. I mean, he's just, his good morning thing, what is that even, a mating ritual?
There's one over here. There's a rooster in my neighborhood. And my mom is just infuriated by it. She's like, roosters are outlawed in the city. I'm like, yeah, but it's one of those laws.
It's
like,
true.
What are you going to do?
Also, you don't know. You get a bunch of chickens and then eventually you find out. I didn't know this. You find out like three of them are roosters and you were like, what the heck?
What's crazy is sometimes chickens crow.
Oh.
So you think it's a rooster, but it's just a chicken that has gender dysmorphia.
Gender is a spectrum.
Right. So
even in poultry.
So the chicken, every once in a while, I guess a chicken takes on the job of crowing. That's something I discovered not very long ago.
So the connection between humans and animals, you know, bees seem to be a focus for much of it. And I think a lot of it is just the usefulness of, you know, Plato is zeroing in on the fact that even though bees and ants don't say much, they appear to have a very complicated society. The ancients knew they had a lot going on. And it's easy to look at a beehive or an anthill and be reminded of a city, right?
Right.
Plato's an urban
And the
guy.
Way that, you know, the division of labor.
Division of labor.
But the bees were associated with death and the underworld.
Yeah.
Which is a connection that I always maybe struggled
It doesn't make sense. If you had to
more
pick,
to connect.
If you had to pick an insect, you would pick maybe the flies that hover over
Ooh.
A body.
Gross. But that's not who you want to lead you into the underworld.
Or a dung beetle.
Follow a bunch of flies. Follow the flies.
I mean, a lot of the importance of bees is just because, you know, people just loved honey. They thought, they're like, this is some good-ass honey. And they're like, bees are the best. Like, bees are mentioned very favorably in the Quran, for example.
Right.
Like Muhammad said, there'd be honey in heaven. And so therefore, in a lot of Islamic traditions, it's a sin to kill a bee because you're not going to have your good-ass baklava without a bee.
Well, the bees obviously play a huge role in Mormonism, right?
Oh, that's true. And that's again, the industry.
In Utah, you see bees as municipal symbols.
It's the beehive state. Yeah. So you know how in Washington, we've got George Washington's silhouette on all the state highway routes. Like right. It'll say the number. And a lot of states have this. Like in Pennsylvania, it's a keystone, like of a keystone arch, of an arch.
Right.
Keystone state. Yeah. In Utah, there's always a beehive and it'll say like state route 16 on it.
But it's not just
a beehive state.
It's not just honey. If in an agrarian society, you're going to need bees to pollinate your crops.
All your crops and your fruit trees and... And I wonder when did people figure that out? They must not have known. I guess you see them, you know, hovering over flowers.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, beekeepers kept bees early on. That domesticating bees was an early invention. But what their connection to the, because I think bees
what do you think about death? Like where does that even?
Bees are part of the foundation myth of a lot of cultures. Like in Africa, I think you'll find that the bee appears in the pantheon of early gods as some, like, god will transform himself or herself into a bee in order to lead the Adam character to his bride. Or, you know, like,
right.
There are many, many traditions in Turkey and across the globe where a bee figures into the original story somehow.
I wonder if it's because they can sting you. Like, God does not lots of nice, sweet things for you, but he can be dangerous.
Hmm.
No?
But the bee always seems, in the foundation myths that I've read, always seems pretty benign, pretty friendly. The stinger does not figure is not in. Part of the story.
It's, well, also, you know, the Mayans have a bee god called Amusenkab, who's often drawn upside down and angry. Not really sure why he would be. Hmm. Maybe they were confusing birds and bats, just like the British didn't know the difference between birds and bees.
The bee turns up on as an emblem in like Navy fighter plane culture.
Sure, but isn't that all about the stinger?
It's the stinger. Right.
It seems like those always have like they're sticking their butt out at you and out.
But they're upside down, aren't they? Aren't they flying in with their stinger out upside down? Oh yeah,
that's what happens in cartoons for sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever been stung by a bee?
Yes.
I was stung a couple of months ago. I was running around Green Lake and I brushed this grass and I looked down and I still don't know if it was a bee or a wasp, but it's still sticking out of me. It has not been able to disengage the stinger. So I flicked it away with my finger.
Did the stinger stay in you?
It really hurt. No, I flicked it away and the stinger went out and I was like, oh good, this won't be bad. And I finished my run. Green Lake is like 3 miles. And by the time I get back, like it's all swollen up. And like starting to swell down blood vessel. And whatever he injected, he got enough in there.
We have so many different kinds of wasps out here. I mean, not that many, but I think a lot of the time when you look at something and go, it's a bee, it's really a wasp.
And this was late in the season. And I think it might be a wasp.
Yeah.
And wasps can survive. They can sting you and then just keep stinging you because they suck.
I got a wasp inside my motorcycle helmet. I don't understand why I'm so phlegmy today. I mean, I generally am, but
there's probably some superstitious thing you didn't do. You need to rub a brass doorknob 3 times in the eve or,
fortunately, there's a brass doorknob right over
phlegm
there.
Phlegm will arrive, I do believe.
A wasp got inside my motorcycle helmet while I was speeding down the highway. It came up underneath and it was a full face helmet. So it just sat and stung my face 14 times before I was able to, like, because I slammed on the brakes and skidded off the road into the dirt.
9 out of 10 people in that situation die.
Yeah. And I, you know, threw the bike down and I'm just like wrestling, trying to get my helmet off. And this wasp is just like, bzz, 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 just stuck in there. It was awful. You should have seen me. Like, for a week, my face was, I looked like I had really gotten into it with a wasp.
You went from the rooster of the group to the pig of the group.
I did. I had to just lay on a bed in a youth hostel and hope that no one asked me to do any chores.
The reason why I mentioned the Mayan bees is because it actually goes against my argument that the sting must have something to do with it, because a lot of Latin American, Mexican, and South American bees are stingless, which I did not know. I mean, they have other defense mechanisms. Like, some of them can still bite. If you attack the hide, they'll go into your hair. Ugh. They'll fly into your ears and nose. Some of them can secrete acid,
Fly into your ears and nose?
I know, right? So this is worse than stinging, but they don't sting. And others are just very friendly and are good pets. Like, a lot of Brazilians keep stingless bees as pets, and they'll even have a nice, like, on the 12th floor balcony of their Rio apartment, they'll have a beehive because...
Do they make honey?
Stingless bees. They do make delicious honey.
Stingless bees.
So why are we still... The problem is, I know why we don't just use stingless bees. These Africanized wild bees that have come into Central and South America actually produce much more honey.
Oh.
And so a lot of the native... not just the Mayan peoples, but a lot of the native bees are getting replaced.
Outcompeted or humans are actively repeating?
Both. Humans, first of all, humans are like, wait, I can get 3 times as much honey from these angry, stingy ones.
Oh.
And also they just... take over the ecosystem from the other one.
The friendly bees, though. I'm just, now I'm wistful.
Yeah, we should get some stingless bees up in here.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the Mayans is, according to the Madrid Codex, they had the tradition of telling the bees. So whatever this tradition is, it somehow spanned the Atlantic.
No, really?
Yeah, so it's exactly the same. as the tradition in Europe, you, if there's a death, you need to go out to the beehives and let them know. And there's additional traditions related to death. Like if you go to a cemetery, you need to wait 3 weeks before you return to your beehive. If you've touched a dead body.
Whoa, now wait a minute. If you just go visit somebody in a cemetery, or if you walk through a cemetery on your way somewhere, you need to wait 3 weeks before you go to your beehive?
And it's worse than this. If you touch a dead body, you need to wash your hands and arms with an orange leaf for 3 straight weeks before you can be cleansed again for your bees.
Wow. Oh, this is in Central America?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And there's other traditions like that in Europe that, you know, kind of the old cleanliness traditions that, for example, menstruating women should be kept away from the bees.
Temples.
Yeah.
Oh, and from the bees.
Yeah, and from the bees. And that's just, you know,
sure.
a suspicion of the female
body.
People
are just making stuff up.
We don't know what this all does, but it's a little unpleasant, so why take chances?
I don't think the bees care.
The bees certainly do not care. Bears prefer it, by all accounts, right?
Well, I think keep menstruating women away from bears is probably a good tradition.
That's like giving up your Subway seat. That's just good manners.
Let's keep you away from the bears.
But a lot of the European traditions about bees are not like, because these Mayan traditions are more like, let's not bring the specter of death to the bees. That's a bad omen.
I see.
The European ones are much more like, let's make the bees part of the whole process.
Right. They're paying attention and they're part of the family.
In a lot of the cases, there's more specifics. Like you're only supposed to whisper to the bees about death at midnight, or you're only supposed to tell them in rhyme that there's been a death. Like
you'd be great at that.
Yeah. I'm always just making up little rhymes about corpses.
Ken the rhyme animal.
Or there's a repeated incantation. Like in some traditions, you're supposed to go up to the beehive and whisper, little brownies, your master is dead. And then you're supposed to wait in silence. And if the bees begin to hum, they're like, okay, we're okay with our new owner. And then you got to put the crepe over the hive.
And like, hop on one foot and unbuckle your shoe.
Well, you include them in all the funeral traditions. It's not just the piece of black crepe. You've also got to bring out, when the funeral cake or drink is served, you got to bring out a little ceremonial plate.
Wow, like, to the bees.
Like leaving cookies for Santa, right?
I wonder how they feel about having their hive draped with black crepe, though. I bet you they feel like, all right, the cake and stuff is good.
We're into the cake.
And actually, have you ever left like champagne out around bees? They drown in it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to.
We have a wasp trap in our backyard that is essentially a hard to get out of champagne goblet that you hang in a tree.
Yeah.
And they're like, this sweet stuff smells good. And then they can't get out. Yeah, I'm the same way. If somebody gives me a piece of cake, I'm like, sweet.
You'll
for
drown
the cake.
In it?
No, I'll eat it. But if somebody drapes a piece of black crepe over me,
right,
I'll be like, I'll just take the cake.
Or over your house.
Or over my entire house.
If someone came and knocked on the door and was like, Ken, your master is dead, you'd be like, thanks. We're covering your house.
No. I'll just take the cake. No. You guys don't back up the truck. No, please. In some cases, the bees were even given an invitation to the funeral.
Uh-huh.
And it would be like, dear bees, this is to inform you that on such and such a date, you are cordially? Rob Cordrially? I just was watching a movie where everyone says menstruation instead of
menstruation.
And I realize I'm a real stickler about the U.
Yeah.
It's not menstruation unless it's got U in the middle of it.
Put the U in menstruation.
Because they're all saying menstruation like that's
menstruation.
Okay. So yeah, I'm going to say.
Put the men in menstruation.
No.
No.
And so it's, well, yes.
Take the men out of men. Put the men.
It sounds bad either way. It sounds misogynistic either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm a stickler for the U in cordially, even though there isn't actually one.
Yeah, I know. Believe me.
Just like the L in the Soviet.
Thank God. Thank God every once in a while you have one.
So the bees are part of the family.
It's funny because I love this kind of tradition, but we're so divorced from death now in a way that in the 19th century or at any prior time, people wouldn't have been, right? I mean, I was a full-grown adult before I ever saw a dead body. Because in our culture, we're just, you know, death is concealed from us. And people die and just sort of aren't around anymore because the whole funeral process, the whole...
Well, also people living longer.
People live a lot longer.
I mean, I was in college and I heard that my high school Spanish teacher had died. And I realized that's the first person I had ever known who died.
Right.
I lived 20 years death-free.
And
which would not have happened
in the mid-19th century when, I mean, people had 15 kids and only seven survived. But also people lived in extended families. So your grandparents were living in the house, your aunts and uncles. That was true of everyone you knew. And so people died all the time in ways that you would have been confronting. You would have seen dead people and known dead people. And you'd have been out talking to the bees all the time.
Do you think it's healthier? I mean, the bees get more conversation for sure, but for a person,
it's healthier for the bees.
Just to have, right. They get company, they get cake. But for people having to confront this stuff, when you read old timey accounts, people either seem very well adjusted to death or just tragically inured to it.
I feel like we live now in a culture where a lot of our issues kind of can be traced back to an idea that we all think we're immortal. In the sense that we don't, we have expectations of what life is going to deliver, expectations of how things should go that don't really bear in mind how fragile we are and how finite our lives are.
And that would not
have been the case.
And it leads to kind of these problems near death where maybe, we're famously a culture that has a hard time just letting go and saying, no, this aggressive treatment is actually worse than a peaceful end.
Right.
Whereas maybe if we had come up with death and we're more comfortable with the idea.
I think right now, as we make this program, there are tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people on life support in hospitals and hospices and old folks' homes where they will never recover, will never walk the earth or breathe normally again, but are being kept alive because they can be. Some of them who will never regain consciousness.
And that's more a result of technology than about attitude toward death, but it's certainly part of a little from column A and a little from column B.
I think it's that, when my dad was in the hospital, there came a time when it was clear that he had shuffled off this mortal coil in all ways except corporeally.
Yeah.
And I had long conversations with the doctors in the intensive care. And they were extremely reticent to make any kind of definitive statement about whether or not he had a chance of recovery. I had to say over and over again, tell me, is there really any chance that he will ever wake up? And they just hemmed and hawed. They equivocated. And after the fact, when I finally said, I now feel confident that he's gone. And so let's not continue with this process. Let's go tell the bees. Let's not keep him hooked to machines. Because the doctor at one point said, we could keep him alive for a year in this state. He was 87 and he had had multiple strokes. And they would only be keeping him alive. And so after the fact, I sat and talked with them and they said, so many people have signed these living wills. So many people come into this situation feeling very confident that they're modern people who understand death and are ready to make the hard decision.
Did your dad have a living will? Can I ask?
He did, but he put it in a file cabinet and didn't tell anybody about it. So I found his living will months after he passed away as I was going through his things. Huh. And it said, don't revive me. Don't use any extraordinary methods to keep me alive. Don't intubate me even. But he never told anybody he'd done it. It was just in a stack of mail.
It's not basically just tell the bees, but tell your next of kin.
Also tell your son.
Yeah.
But because I was in that situation, empowered to make those life and death decisions as his next of kin, I said, there is, he has sepsis of the blood now, right? There was a long period where there just wasn't enough oxygen.
Yeah.
But the doctor said, you would be overwhelmed to learn how many people in that situation cannot say it's over and keep their loved one alive by these methods because they cannot, in the crucial moment, embrace death.
And that could be related to a culture of avoiding.
Somehow. I honestly, as my dad got older, he never thought he was going to die. Even when he was in the hospital, he was you could still see it in his eyes. He thought he would live forever.
I mean, you always have. 100% of the time, you've been alive.
You have been alive.
And you have to kind of plan for that, right? You know, if if I live, there's going to be stuff to think about and stuff to do. So I'm going to go with that as my plan A.
Right.
And I guess push too far, that's when you get into trouble.
And in particular, I think probably the secularizing of the modern world, people are less confident about where they're, when they die, where they're going.
Yeah, I guess if you thought, I will certainly see him again on the other side.
Right, or I'm headed to meet my maker. Like, this is exciting even. Although you rarely see that in ancient traditions of people, like, funerals aren't like celebrations of going through the portal, right? They're always sad. People kind of, you know, they go, I'm off to meet my maker, but it's rare, I guess, unless you're martyring yourself, it's rare that you do it with like your best shoes on.
That does seem much more of a modern secular thing. A celebration of life will be held in the Unitarian Church on 7th.
Yeah, the minister will be breaking out his acoustic guitar. But I would have loved to have told the bees. And it's not just that we don't have bees around. It's that my dad's death was the only real death I've ever confronted. And that concludes Telling the Bees. Entry 1285.PR2413, certificate number 44411 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era.
In your hives.
And it isn't just social media where you tap your abdomen rhythmically.
Do a waggle dance to like. And do a different waggle dance to share.
To like and poke your friends.
It's a literal poke.
Oh. You may enjoy the social media of our era, which also had stingers. And these stingers also stuck in you after the sting. But sadly, it did not kill the stinger.
But like a bee sting, it would make you feel bad for days.
It would make you feel bad for days. It's just that the person that stung you would continue to live to sting again.
And baking like soda wouldn't help.
But you might enjoy our social media. It's hilarious. You can find Ken on Twitter at Ken Jennings, out there just making jokes right and left, family friendly.
Cockeyed observations on the affairs of the day.
My Twitter account used to be great, but then I got stung one too many times. Now I just cower in the corner.
Because you had anaphylactic shock.
I only every once in a while tweet something really innocuous. I took some kid on Twitter the other day.
I missed it.
And I was reminded why I don't go on Twitter.
Because he defeated you. Oh, he was like, straw man. He did. Ad hominem confirmation bias. Boom.
Put me right down in my old man rocking chair where I belong. Also, you can find me on Instagram where I just posted a 30-second video of my hat that got pulled off of my head by a tree.
It was waving in the wind.
And it was twisting in the wind. That is the kind of content you cannot get for any money.
Is the hat still out there?
Nope, it fell at the end and I picked it up and put it on my head and continued walking.
Oh, so I just revealed I did not watch to the end of the video.
Yeah, it was 30 seconds long and you got to 20 seconds and were like, boring.
You know my attention span is not 30 seconds just from doing this show. I was hoping the hat was still outside and you would have to walk out and whisper family events to it.
No, you know, that's my life hat.
It gives you life. You've worn it your whole life.
It's all of the above. I will wear that hat unto the end. They'll bury me in that hat.
I've seen you in that hat, but I didn't realize it was kind of your only hat.
It's not my only hat, but it's my life hat.
When do you wear other hats?
Other occasions. I mean, I wear it.
Besides life.
I wear it for special occasions.
They're from past lives?
It was my dad's hat. It was his life hat. You know, I would give it to my daughter, but I don't think she wants it.
My daughter will wear weird kid crocheted hats until the cows come home.
Oh.
So if you want to pass it on to my daughter.
She's like a child after my own heart. No, I don't want to give your daughter my life hat.
Your daughter doesn't want it, apparently.
Well, maybe.
What I'm saying is maybe you're a father figure to Katie.
I would like to be, but I haven't been invited into that role by her or by anyone in your family.
Or me.
Whenever I'm in your house, it's just like, oh, hello, would you like something? Okay.
She is quiet.
Toodle-a-loodle. She's a lovely, lovely young lady. I would try and parent her, but I try to parent all children.
Well, take her to a McDonald's play place or something, and maybe you guys will be friends.
She's too old for that. She's almost a teen.
She is almost. She turned 12 yesterday.
See?
Isn't that crazy?
That's one away from being a teen. She doesn't want to go to a McDonald's play place.
She's also vegetarian. She really doesn't want to go to a McDonald's
play place. I really don't want to take her in that case. You can email us, please. Email us At omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com, there's an 85% chance you will get a reply from Ken. There's a 15% chance you will get a reply from me. So
that is contractual.
Make it enticing. You can send us mail at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155. I think we've established that we are reluctant to eat anything you send us. It's unlikely you're going to send us any custom tailored garments.
We probably won't apply it topically either. Like, no. Would you apply a lotion or a soap or a bath salt?
No. Doubtful. I tend to be allergic to perfumed soaps, and I don't want anything with CBD in it because I don't do drugs, and you don't either, so we don't want any of that pot stuff.
I don't even know what's... Oh, CBD. I thought those were the little plastic discs that make lotion feel smooth, but then they live in the ocean forever or whatever.
Oh, right, the little CBDs. No, CBD is the
the cannabis
ingredient in cannabis that is not supposedly not psychoactive, but is instead...
just really good for your corns, for your bunions.
Right, but we can't do that. Don't ask us why. But most importantly, I think we'd like to direct you to our fan group on Facebook, the Omnibus Futurelings. We delight in their antics.
It's a little beehive.
It is. It's a little hive.
It does not have a social structure, though. It's an anarchy, we were saying.
It does tend to be fairly anarchic. Every once in a while, someone who's never posted before comes in and throws the hive all a tither by saying something that the regular inhabitants find titillating.
I have literally never seen that happen.
Buzz, 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 buzz. What? In your estimation, it's just the same 90 people in there?
Well, in a beehive, the new guy would be like, hey, I found a new source of flowers. And in the case of Futurelings, that would be like, hey, I found a better podcast. And so we don't want that to happen.
I think what usually happens is somebody comes in and goes, hi, first time, what do they say? Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, they'll be like, I just listened to... the European Starling, and I have some notes.
But anyway, we encourage you to go there and cold kick it with your fellow bees, making the honey of Facebook content.
The honey of content?
The honey of content.
I think the honey is the warm, sweet feeling they all get of fellowship and camaraderie.
The warm embrace?
Yeah.
I thought.
Like, you know, bees keep each other warm, right? Like a beehive will be 10 degrees warmer than the surrounding log or whatever.
No, I thought that the entire modern economy was based on people like you, me, and all of the futurelings putting content on the internet, which then Facebook, Google, and Twitter profit from in the billions of dollars. And
they take the nectar of our life experience and beautifully turned sentences, and they swish them in their mouths like a bee does, and excrete the honey of higher stock price.
We are the bees. They are the ones harvesting our honey.
Oh, they're the beekeepers.
But we're the dumb bees that don't know where our honey keeps going. We're like, we just keep making honey. We just make this honey, and then every once in a while the
giant with a mask and a smoke gun
calms us down briefly. And it's our content.
It's Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey or whatever. He gets in there with his smoke gun into the hive.
Right. Unfortunately, those guys are.
And you can try to sting him. You can be like, dumb. You can be like, hey, at Twitter, the Nazis printed my address. And they'll just be like, more honey.
Yeah. Our content policy does not indicate that was a bad post.
Keep making honey and keep it down.
I've met some of those guys, and they are not smarter than the average bee. They're just normals. They're just scared normals like everybody else.
Are they smarter than like a smart bee, like the Honey Nut Cheerios bee?
No, they're not. They are the average bee. They think they're smarter than the average bee. Smarter than the average bee.
But they're just drones.
Think it's their honey. Yeah, they're just normals. I mean, the number of people I've met in my life who are truly, truly exceptionally smart.
Besides me.
Besides you. I mean, there just haven't been that many. And they definitely are not like Silicon Valley people.
They're not executive. They're not tech executives.
No, they're not. They didn't. Those are not the ones who have blinded me with their wit, or even their ability to navigate like a simple
or even science. Yeah,
room. You know, like
there should be a song about tech startups called "They Did Not Blind Me with Science." Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our little hive is going to survive. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, that the black crepe will never be draped on our planet. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if the bee god allows, what was the name of the Mayan bee god? If Amusen Cab, the upside down Mayan bee god, allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.